Blog Talk Radio.
Relationships. My name is Evinda Leppins, a.k.a. Kim, for my friends. And speaking of friends, Steve is right beside me. How was your weekend?
It was good. Our church is going down to Mexico this next weekend. We work with a group called Hands of Mercy. Some of you may have heard of them. And they build loft homes. And so last weekend, we built the pieces of the home. We trailer them down, and then we put them all together, kind of like an erector set.
Mm-hmm.
So we build the roof parts and the wall
parts. How do you transport them without thrashing them?
Well, they're all in walls at a time. So there's a toy hauler kind of situation,
although
it's a vehicle hauler, and you put them on a trailer, lay all the parts down.
Nice.
Every wall is laid down, the floors are laid down, and then drive them down there.
And that's why it goes quick, because we went to a house build with Rodney and Cheryl.
Mm-hmm.
And we were there
4 to 5 hours. Get there about 8 or 9. You're out there by 2 or 3.
Two houses.
Yeah, we are two, actually.
Yeah, we did two houses. So we were there a little bit longer than that. But man, oh man, was I exhausted when we left.
Saturday was nice because it was cool.
Oh, it was kind of a nice
overcast,
day, wasn't it?
Perfect.
And yesterday was nice, too. It wasn't really warm. It was a nice breeze by us.
That's usually the downside. You get sweat, and, you know, it's hot out there, but it was beautiful.
Yeah, it was really pretty, windy, kind of a breezy day. But, you know, Saturday I helped a friend who took her house back, and she's going to be moving back into it, but she wanted to tear out all the bricks. It wasn't brick tile. It was full-on bricks.
So
we had these jackhammers, and I learned how to use one.
Whoa.
And I was down on my knees sometimes because it jumps.
Good vibration.
Oh, my gosh. I was backed up against the wall.
Oh.
And my hands are so sore from
gripping
that thing. And they took a video. They could not believe. They all stopped to watch me.
Oh, of course.
I got like 15
That's entertaining.
Square feet out.
And a woman with a tool like that.
Oh, I was intense. And somebody posted, who said tools are for boys?
Well, if it's for wrecking, give them the tool.
Yeah. But
otherwise,
don't
touch my saw, you know.
I will have you know that I got, I would say, 50% of the bricks I removed, I kept intact.
Whoa.
Yes, because she goes, I think I want to keep
them
after all.
There
exactly.
We go.
That's so great. That's so cool.
Love that.
Lots of work. So anyways, last week we were talking about just being able to understand, first of all, that we all have an emotional dashboard, and we kind of touched on it a little bit, and we want to talk about why we don't pay attention to that emotional dashboard and why most of us were not even aware that we had one.
Mm.
And Steve had given us a couple of really cool analogies about, you know, the car and, you know, the different idiot lights on the dashboard,
sure,
if you will, or, you know, but the same thing goes with the emotional dashboard. But what I thought would be really good to kind of dig into just a little bit before we actually get to the first thing you want to have to make any relationship succeed. But let's go back a little bit, and we have some information that we actually presented at a relationship workshop, and I had kept it. And one of the pieces that we had was, kind of goes like this, is chances are that your parents were not able to manage their own internal stress so that your needs could remain a focus. And if you were to go back in their history, they weren't taught how to feel and deal. So that would be a way to explain why we don't.
Yeah, my own history. My mom and dad fought all the time. And otherwise, they worked all the time. And so at night, we'd have babysitters there. So it was really kind of survival. And I might have emphasized, you relate or you survive.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have dashboards that come on as it relates to your own kind of self-protection. But that's not going to help you be successful in other awareness. So you have a sense of your own feelings, your own thoughts. And depending on how dysfunctional it was, everything kind of becomes personal. Because when they fought all the time, they would yell at us. And so it was just chaos.
Yeah.
And so we don't have a good read on ourselves. Even when we see other people wincing a little bit, maybe because I got a tone, I take that personally.
Uh-huh.
So I project into them what I believe they're feeling about me,
mm-hmm,
when I may be feeling that about myself. And so, yeah, that's not a good tool if your parents didn't help you express
right
what was going on with you when It could have been the playground. It could have been what was going on in the home. Let's say you got a little older and some of your friends were mistreating you. And when I was in sixth grade, my first year of being kicked out of school or classes every year after that, including my senior year.
Oh, my God.
So I come home, and I had a conflict with the teacher over something that was misunderstood. And I come home, they forewarned her, there were no cell phones. They called her, and I brought a note. And the first question she asked is, so what did you do?
Your mom asked that.
Yes.
So instead of saying what happened.
Well, even to get the information, mm-hmm. you know, I was at fault. I embarrassed her. Most parents see their kids as extensions of them.
Right.
And so how dare you make me look bad? And mm-hmm. So, there's no wonder there's no other awareness and other centeredness because we don't feel safe.
You know, and it's crazy, and it really does carry over into an adulthood. You know, I'm going to share a personal example. My guy, unemployed, and I think we're on week 16, not that I'm counting, and I was helping him with an unemployment application, and in that, they asked different, what would you like to do? And he had no clue. And to me, that is being totally unaware of the emotional dashboard, and it's really cool, though, because God wastes nothing. I believe that God is using that to show him the necessity to pay attention to what it is that you're feeling and whatnot, because he doesn't even know what he wants to do because he's not sure.
Well, the codependent person, they are the kind of poster child of not aware.
Mm-hmm.
And so because they lived in an environment that was threatening to them or chaotic, they're aware of other people's needs, other people's feelings. And so defines a codependent sometimes indirectly is when you ask them how they're feeling or what they think, and then they ask, well, who's asking me?
Yeah.
So there's already a cue given to each person or situation as to how you behave, what you're supposed to say, raised in a Christian church. I was. You know, guilt was a big deal, and we were guilty for a lot of things. That's why Jesus came, of man-made rules, and if you smoked or swore or played cards or, things that had nothing to do with spirituality.
Yeah.
We were just made to feel guilty. Dance, you know, at least Jesus not only drank wine, he made it.
Yeah, right.
But, of course, what do you do with that? You know, because, again, the church says, oh, you're a bad person. So you're not even free. You can't be free to experience or test your world. And a child should be safe when they behave, not to feel fearful of this conditionality that, well, since you sinned, you know, we'll back up from you for a little while. And then you kind of have to earn your way back. You're not even sure when you got back.
Yeah, earn your way back.
Yeah.
You know, and let me just add, too, that, you know, parents, that's how they were parented. And so we're definitely not bashing
parents.
Absolutely. And, you know, George's parents are great, great people. And I'm certainly not bashing them. I can just see, you know, based on being married to him for almost 11 years now, and also, you know, things that he has shared, that, you know what, mom and dad were busy earning a living to support 9 children, I think it was.
Wow.
And mom was working 2 jobs. Dad was working at the Metropolitan or that bus
Metro
thing.
Bus District.
Or RTD.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Something like that.
There
he was, up in there. So they were always busy surviving.
Sure.
So basically, if we think about it in the way that Steve has taught me years and years ago, is daddy's put the frame, they build the frame, and mommy's color it in. So dad does the framework and mom does the nurturing, okay?
Right.
So dad's supposed to do some parenting and mom's supposed to come along and definitely agree in that parenting, at least in front of the kids.
Well, and that assumes that they were a team.
Right, exactly. And most of the time, they're not. And so it's just a perpetual cycle. So if it wasn't safe to say, ouch, in, you know, growing up, then of course it's not going to be safe to say, ouch, as we get older. So then we become totally unaware that we do have emotions, and so until we fall off the tracks. So something else I wanted to bring up, and this is for all you educators out there. I think you'll really appreciate this. I found this in the article called 10 Things Every Teacher Needs to Know About Emotions and Learning.
Wow.
The author points out that it is common sense to acknowledge that one's emotions certainly hold influence over academic and professional performances. And I want to say that's in the home and out of the home.
Affect learning.
Yes.
Is basically what they say. And statistics regarding children who come from chaotic homes or violent homes, that a child will leave their home and it takes them about a half a school day to be present. So
in
whatever
class,
that was in the classroom, we're talking about mentally present, emotionally present.
Whether they have
present.
A good morning or not?
Yes.
Wow.
So if they left at home and the parents were disruptive to them, they might have been spanked or mom yells, that the child recalibrates and it takes time to relax about what's going on around you. And now the sad part is, of course, now they go through the academic day, half of it kind of there, kind of not. I can relate to that.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go back home after school, and now you have homework, which my parents never helped assist in, and the chaos starts over. And so this academic achievement environment, can you imagine a teacher trying to teach the class or the students learning in the class and the teacher's yelling at the kids all day?
Yikes.
Yeah, you can't learn. And so whatever learning is about, learning is about academics, learning is about relationships, learning is about self-confidence, learning is about freedoms to make mistakes and go through those. And so all that learning requires an environment that does not create me to be afraid or I feel at risk or
occupied. Which begins at home.
Absolutely.
That kind of learning begins at home. It's
Absolutely.
Carried over into the classroom. And then, of
right.
course, it's carried over with our friends. It's
sure.
carried over into higher education. It's
right.
carried over into church. And so learning does actually begin at home. But something else this study was talking about says that feelings impacting learning do not exist as one solid nebulous mass. Rather, they sit on five different spectrums. So if you could imagine five seesaws, if you will, like the teeter-totter.
Okay.
I can remember that as a kid.
So happy or not.
Yeah, exactly. Each of which factor into their overall performance. First, you have anxiety and confidence. So on one side, you have anxiety, and then you flip it, and you got confidence. Then the next one is boredom versus fascination, frustration versus euphoria, dispirited versus encouraged, and terror versus enchantment. So if children are not allowed to express these feelings at home, school becomes the next classroom to learn how to feel and deal with their emotions.
Well, let's just talk about performance and anxiety. If there's no freedom to make mistakes, we watched a movie last night, and it was a drummer movie.
Drummer.
Yes, it was about a kid who wanted to be a drummer, and it was about the title of a song, and that was the title of the movie, and hopefully I'll think of it in a minute. But he was in a college. It's a fairly new movie.
Okay.
And that the instructor was abusive out of the gate.
Ooh.
And he didn't know that when he was asked to come and kind of sit in as a drummer. This is the top group of the school. And he, of course, is a wannabe. If you're at the top, then you will succeed and learn a lot. And so right out of the gate, the instructor hears. It's amazing that people have this kind of musical hearing. Mm-hmm. I have it. I can hear it. But some people have, like, perfect pitch. So he hears two trombones. Well, first of all, the whole group. When you go to perform in these kinds of groups, you're behind a curtain, you know,
right.
so nobody can even see you when you go to compete.
Right.
And so he knows that if people have good ears, they're going to hear that somebody's out of tune. And he goes, one of you in the group, so he had the trumpets play and he had the saxes play. He gets to the trombones, and there's two of them. One of them is out of tune.
Oh, dear.
And he's in their face. Oh. Do you know? I mean, they are so terrified to give the right answer or the wrong answer. They don't even have time to process that. And so anxiety overwhelms the natural sense of the atmosphere that we should have if we're going to learn anything. And if fear is in there, the only thing we're learning how to do is make the teacher happy
right.
versus learning the skill. So these dyads, if you will, these comparatives of anxiety versus confidence, boredom versus fascination, some kids are prone to daydreaming. And parents aren't good with that because it looks like you're not doing enough. And maybe you're in fascination and maybe you are bored, but you need the freedom to have time away from pressure. And so frustration versus euphoria, is okay to be frustrated versus always having to feel good. Dispirited versus encouraged, you know, the what's wrong with you message, yeah, just takes, and that's what that instructor did the whole time. Gail wanted to just stop watching the movie.
Yeah, it's hard to, it is.
Oh, my God.
It's kind of like boxing. Like, I cannot watch boxing. Somebody pummels somebody time after time after time and draw blood or whatever. And to me, to watch what you just talked about is like boxing.
Well, this young man, his mom died when he was like two. And then, or left him when he was two, and he was raised by his dad. And in the hallway, you see the instructor getting to know this kid. Then the next thing you know, he's playing the drums. He can't play them right. The guy's yelling at him. There's tears coming down his face. Oh. He goes, now I can tell why your mom left you.
Oh, no, he didn't.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. And that's where Gail just wanted to, oh, my gosh, you know, mm-hmm. this is just way. Mm-hmm. And so how can you get dispirited versus encouragement, you know, mm-hmm. for mistakes you make? And, hey, you'll be good at what you do. So these are all very terror versus enchantment. To think only negative things when it comes to the free thought. You know, you should have to fantasize over things, and the only fantasies you can think about are being beat up or being abused, or and so your mind is constantly focused on how bad things are going to happen to you. So these are huge, huge, huge
factors. Well, and it's
factors.
Not to say, I mean, you know, there's a lot of gifted educators out there, and then there are some that should not be educators, just as in every profession. But all we're trying to say is that learning, you know, school is the next classroom, if you will, of life. But learning does begin at home. And in the classroom, if kids are given a real positive experience, that
sure.
actually can help alleviate what's going on oftentimes.
Well, you're talking about gifted teachers. Yeah, I think. But then teachers are under pressure, sad.
Yeah.
Because in the end, they're scored on how well they did based
the,
on the scores
the
of their, there's
those
California tests, there's a national test, there's a whole change mm-hmm. happening in our culture of education in terms of changing how the teachers are teaching. I think it's Common Core is the framework that that's happening on now. And so it makes it really tough when a teacher is under pressure. So now the kids will be under pressure. And so, the atmosphere, real, real significant to achievement.
Yeah, so teachers do play an incredibly valuable role in a child's processing, understanding, and managing of emotions because they in and of themselves stand as its very own learning experience. So the problem is, you know, the problem continues. We're just trying to kind of trace it back, if you will. Why is it that we continue to drive our cars and ignore the warning signs on the dashboard? It's because we've learned how to ignore the signals. The problem mm-hmm. with that is our emotions tend to manage us instead of managing them when we ignore them for far too long. So, do your significant relationships bring up feelings that you have never felt before? If you're having trouble managing your emotions, perhaps you have missed a few lessons on how to understand your emotional dashboard. And then, I think you gave me this, emotions are like frozen yogurt. They come in a wide and complex variety.
So. Yes. And I think how to manage emotion, how to express emotion. If you're not aware, they go into this reservoir of time, and eventually, which is sad because the emotions we should have been talking about were fear and sadness and hurt, and because we don't get to share those, and you also then have a model in your home of how you express your feelings, and most likely, if you were stifled to share these other very sensitive emotions, they were probably stifled by anger and risk and threat. And so now when you finally share your emotions, a drip will be a spill. And the very thing you told yourself you're never going to do or be like, you now become. So you finally share anger. You finally express frustration. And, of course, what does that do? The same thing it did with you, and that is, you know, it's off-putting. Mm-hmm. You know, it removes people from you. It backs them up. And all you're trying to do, if emotion is need-driven, it's hard to read a need when there's anger in your tone.
Yeah.
And then their needs rise, and their need is to back up from what feels risky or threatening.
Yeah. So before we go on to the very first ingredient, if you will, to make a relationship successful, let me just give you a couple of things that in my research I've done regarding learning how to feel and deal, learning how to really pay attention. One thing I did discover, this is actually something, I forget what program this comes from, but learning to feel and deal is one of life's most important skills, but how do we do that? To manage our emotions, we have to be able to accept and respond to them. But we can't pass this skill on to our children if we don't know how to do it. So we've got to practice paying attention to this emotional dashboard. So we've got a couple of acrostics for you. First of all, HALT, and this is a very popular one, and I think it might be in a recovery program. It says, are you hungry, angry, lonely, tired? So HALT is hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. You need to be able to stop and recognize, or one of those lights blinking on your emotional dashboard. Now, I know for men, if they are hungry or tired, they turn into way different people. And you want to talk about women on their broom? Well, let me tell you, I've seen men go get on theirs when they're hungry or tired. And the combination is deadly, totally deadly. So then if you figure out you're one of these five emotions, or four, sorry, then I want you to stand. Are you ready for this acrostic? Stand. Stand, S stands for stop and check your emotional dashboard. T stands for take your feelings to him whose grace is sufficient for you and whose power is made perfect in your weakness, I might add. A is admit your need to him. This forms the partnership. In other words, you don't need to take it necessarily to someone else, but we're teaching you to go vertical so that your relationship's horizontal will be more healthy. And then N is never quit. And I love this last one. This one gave me goosebumps when he gave it to me. Do not mistake temptation for permission. Do not mistake temptation for permission. So that's stand. Stop and check your dashboard. Take your feelings to him. Admit your need to him. Never quit. And don't mistake temptation for permission. So those are some key things to do to be able to begin to learn how to pay attention to that emotional dashboard, which is vital to understanding these principles that we're going to be giving you, which are 10 of them. And the first one is trust. What in the world does trust have to do with a relationship, Steve? Can you tell me?
Well, we talked about Erickson's 10 stages.
Yeah.
And the significance isn't only that they are stages, but the significance is that if you don't build on the one, then you won't build on the ones to follow. So it takes trust as the foundational platform from birth. Trust is based on consistency. Trust is based on predictability. Trust is based on high risk. Trust requires...
Wait a minute, what do you mean by that? High risk, what do you mean?
Well, it's high risk because...
Because you're vulnerable.
Our vulnerability is very high.
Okay.
And we need safety. Mm-hmm. If I'm not safe, I have to be safe. What you're going to do with me, who is me? Well, mm-hmm. me is how I feel. And if I make little mistakes and I'm given a lot of cues early on about what's permissive and what's not, what's safe and what's not, what can be talked about and what can't be talked about.
Hey, do that quote, that one quote from Stephen King about trust. That's
Stephen
a good one,
King.
Right?
Because well,
what you're talking about right now, this fits it.
Well, it says, the trust of the innocent is the liar's most useful tool.
The trust of the innocent is...
Yes, because the trust doesn't know if you're lying.
Mm-hmm.
The trustful trusts what you're saying is true.
Mm-hmm.
What's trustful is what we need to know we're safe, and that's why it doesn't take much, and it's little things at a time. And depending on what I come in with, so let's say a man I start dating or I want to start dating, he says I'll be there at 6, and then he comes in at 6:05. Now, if your father was not trustable, who, let's say mom and dad divorced, and this is a common story, dad said he was coming over, he never did, sat on the porch waiting. And so now...
Somebody's 5 minutes is like a half hour.
Oh,
here,
my
right?
gosh, yeah, your anxiety.
Yeah.
Your anxiety rises. And by the way, trust is based on consistency.
Mm-hmm.
So if someone lied to you daily, they're going to lie to you tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And so you trusted your dad, in this case, to come, and he didn't. And now this is a man. I talked to a very good friend of mine who was on drugs when he was early in his parenthood as a parent. And so fast forward, his daughter's now maybe 29 to 30 years old, and she's telling her father now, because he's sober, he has recovered. All that damage was done during their childhood.
Mm-hmm.
And she's saying, and talking to her dad, which is really cool, he is a changed man, and she's risking asking him what he thinks about her having a baby without a husband.
Oh, interesting. So she trusts him enough.
She trusted him enough
that.
To ask that question,
yeah.
And it bothers him. And I said, well, and it was hard to remove him from the question, but I said, well, what was her dad like?
Okay, so you got him to see outside of himself.
As tears start coming to his eyes.
Right.
That
right.
I don't trust men, I trust me.
Right.
So I can have a baby, but I can't trust having a baby with a man.
Mm.
But I need one to have one.
Mm.
But I don't want to have one around as a dad. And so that's the trust of innocence. Children are innocent at birth, and what are lies to them is the question, especially when you're Christian parents and you do things inconsistently or hypocritically or hatefully.
Mm-hmm.
So what are they trusting? And their innocence takes on the whole thing of, then I guess everybody, blank. Mm. Then I guess everybody doesn't keep their word. I guess everybody doesn't love as Jesus does.
So what you're saying, and I feel this for my son, bless his heart. I feel that because he has earthly father issues, he has heavenly father issues,
mm-hmm.
just, trusting.
Sure.
He always says, I have a hard time trusting. I know he keeps coming through for me. But is there a form of surrendering that comes with trust? And I don't want to just talk about, we talk about like trusting other people, not God. Let's take God out. That's vulnerability. But
in every fear, the anxiety of that fear keeps us from moving forward. And that is why you have to choose to believe.
Mm-hmm.
Before the person can prove to you that they are trustable. So you would have to make, and it would be a cool thing if in a relationship, in the beginning stages of that relationship, to let the person who feels like you don't trust them to actually say, it's not you, it's me.
Right, right.
And I want to learn to trust you.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to risk. Now, the person on the other end may have no clue what you're really saying.
Right.
But I want to learn to risk. I want to learn that you'll keep your word. I want to learn that when I speak what I'm feeling, you're not going to hurt me. In fact, Stephen Covey says, trust is the glue of life.
Mm, it's beautiful.
It's the most essential ingredient in effective communication.
Yeah.
It's the foundational principle that holds all relationships.
Mm-hmm.
So if we don't have that, again, it's survival or relating.
I think trust is to a relationship what Google is to the computer.
Oh,
there
yeah, well, without one, yeah. There's got to be that present to have an effective.
As you're saying this, my heart's kind of being squeezed with some hope, and that is I remember George not too long ago saying to me, how he actually admitted he has a hard time processing what's in his head, so he doesn't, as far as with me. You know what I mean?
Right.
When he's asked, how are you doing? How's your day? It's good. It was fine. And, but he said, but really what's in there, there's so much going in there, I just don't know how to relate it. And then I'll never forget, he looked at me, we stopped walking, and I looked right in his eyes, and I swear I could see down to his soul, and he said, but I don't want to be that way with you.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it's that like, cool. I think he's just beginning to trust me, and that's no dig on him.
Sure.
I think he's just...
Yeah, what did it take with nine kids in your family that nobody ever cared to listen to?
Because I'm seeing that, it's helping me to be more patient and to understand him on a different level, but because it has nothing to do with me.
Well, it makes it, not about you.
It's not about me, and I think, though, that he is actually just beginning to trust me, that he could actually convey those words to me.
Well, Albert Einstein fits this perfectly because it says, whoever is careless with the truth in small matters cannot be trusted with important matters.
Whoever is careless with truth in the small matters.
Yes, cannot be trusted. And so that's what he did. He gave you a small glimpse of his, what's inside him.
Yes.
And he was saying, I want to, but I'm not sure I know how.
Holy moly, we just got the thing that this show is like almost coming to a close. So mark where we are because we're gonna be talking about trust next week.
Okay.
For sure. And I don't anticipate that we'll move from trust next week, but trust is the first ingredient we're starting with in order to make your relationship successful. That's your romantic relationship, husband, wife, whatever, spouse, boyfriend, girlfriend, but it's also vital in the other relationships as well. Parenting, sibling, and friendship. So what does trust have to do with it? Keep on joining us every Monday, 12:30, right here at Blog Talk Radio-Chicklet Power. Reach out and make it a great day.
Bye-bye.